And our reader is Debbie M. From Austin, Texas.
Okay. At the end of the road, I came to my first NA meeting because of a 12-step call. It wasn't that I hadn't tried to stop using. I'd done nothing else for the last few years, but I tried by myself, my way. I was traveling around the world, changing cities, countries, and continents. I would have changed planets if I could have. I tried everything to get away from drugs. I stopped on various occasions. I substituted one drug for another. I tried changing boyfriends. I had a baby, thinking for sure that would stop me from using. But if I couldn't stop using for me, how could I stop using for someone else? Nothing or no one could stop me. As far back as I can remember, I've had a need to escape from myself and my feelings. As a child, I lived in the world of books and fantasy in an effort to escape from emotions like fear, shame, inadequacy, insecurity, inferiority, and oversensitivity. I became someone else. I went away from my family as often as I could to experience something different. I had to have excitement, something, something new all the time. I left home at 16 years old. By that time, I had already started to use drugs. I joined the hippies in the early 70s, and I left Norway and went to Denmark. I continued using, and I started to smuggle drugs because I was not able to keep a job. I went on to India on the hippie trail, and I ended up at the end station, which was Goa in India. Here, I was hanging out with freaks from all over the world. I could get my hands on all kinds of drugs. I thought I had arrived in paradise. It looked like it from the outside, but there is no such place as paradise for an active addict. The drugs turned against me. I was imprisoned by my addiction, and I tried to get away time and time again. I continued my criminal behavior and became an international drug smuggler. I ended up in jail, but I continued using while incarcerated. I became an extravagant consumer of drugs. I had developed a lifestyle of drugs, parties, and travel. But the emotions I tried getting away from caught up with me. The shame, fear, inferiority, despair, and loneliness only got bigger and bigger. I could not go on anymore. At one point, I was sure that I would die a using addict. I was close to death. I had developed chronic bronchitis, and the attacks became more and more frequent. One doctor told me I would die from this. This was the condition in which two members of Narcotics Anonymous found me and brought me the message of recovery. They saved my life. They told me I had a disease and that recovery was possible. I went to a treatment center and there started to attend NA meetings. I moved back to my native country after having been away for 19 years. While spending a few months in the south of Europe, I had the opportunity to attend my first local NA convention and my first regional European convention. I went back to Norway, started an NA meeting in my hometown, and became active in trying to spread the message about NA to the public. I mostly sat by myself at this NA meeting, but when I stopped listening for footsteps and instead focused on the fact that I was there for my own sake, things went much better. I was a member of NA, even if I was there alone. After 1 year, I moved down south, still clean, and got involved in an already established NA community with a couple of groups going. We formed a service structure, and slowly but surely, NA started to grow in Norway. I started to work the steps, and I also, slowly but surely, started to grow. I had the disease of addiction, just as much today as I had a few years ago. I'm powerless, but I have a power greater than myself in my life today who has helped me be restored to sanity. Just for today, I no longer need to escape from myself and my feelings. I hand my will and my life over to God as I understand God, which has relieved me of trying to control people, places, and things in order to get things to be the way I want them to be. It is up to God now. The results, I mean, the footwork is up to me. I attend meetings regularly where I try to focus on bringing a message of recovery and giving back what other members so generously gave to me. I have the opportunity to work a few fourth steps that have revealed my old, unhealthy behavior patterns. I got rid of the shame and guilt that had become such a burden. I had the opportunity to focus on my assets, parts of me that I did not know I possessed. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that I could share so honestly all of myself with another human being, my sponsor in the fifth step. By sharing about myself, I found love and acceptance in the eyes of another woman. And by daring to be myself, I could start to like myself. I'm just another human being with defects of character and shortcomings. What a revelation. Further, in the eighth step, I made a list of people whom I had harmed. I put myself first on the list. I hurt a lot of people, but none as much as I hurt myself. I had nothing but contempt for myself. So there was no limit to the pain I inflicted on me. Others whom I hurt were usually people close to me. They were people I loved while I was charging through life with my self-centered need for instant gratification. I made direct amends to those people when to do so would not hurt them more. Instead of inflicting more hurt, I practiced love, compassion, and forgiveness. My experience is that it is much easier to make direct amends than indirect ones, because the latter takes much more time. I keep on making amends to myself on a daily basis. I take care of myself today. I thank my higher power on a daily basis for my life and for my recovery. These are two gifts that it is up to me to take good care of. I do that by working NA's program of recovery and also practicing a healthy lifestyle. I've stopped filling myself up with chemicals. I eat healthy food. I rest. I do exercises. And I set boundaries where needed. I treat myself with respect and love today because I deserve it. In the 10th step, I do a daily inventory and I look at my behavior throughout the day. Today, I'm more able to say, I'm sorry, my mistake, when I do not act according to my values. I pray and meditate on a daily basis, and I try to act according to God's will. I can often tell God's will today by the way things feel. If an answer hits me like a bolt of lightning, it is usually my will. If an answer develops over time, it is usually God's will. I'm no longer controlled by self-seeking behavior. This is what a spiritual awakening is like for me. I've gone through a radical personality change as a result of working the 12 steps. I'm still actively involved in doing service. I continually work my 12th step. I have a message to pass on today, a message of recovery from the disease of addiction. I can only keep what I have by giving it away, and there are many ways I can carry the message. I was not clean during that first 12-step call many years ago on a Mediterranean island. As I put my small daughter to bed that night, I took the last of my drugs. I sat on the kitchen floor for hours, crying in despair. Those NA members told me that my recovery was up to me. It was up to me to ask for help. By the time I went to bed that night, I'd made up my mind. I wanted to be free of drugs. The The process of surrender began that evening, and when I awoke the next morning, I had hope for the first time in years. I still like traveling, and I still like hanging out with addicts. I've had the opportunity to experience NA as a worldwide fellowship. Before, I met using addicts from all around the world. Now, I meet recovering addicts from all around the world. What a difference, and what a privilege. I'm Debbie, and I'm an addict.
Debbie, at this time, I would like to introduce our next speaker slash author, and that would be Monica from Norway.
My name is Monica, and I'm an addict. Hello, everybody. It's awesome to be here, and it's such a privilege to have my story read up. And thank you, Debbie. And it brings back some memories of what happened a long time ago. And thank you, Francis, for asking me. It's a great honor to be asked to share here. And seeing so many people, it's really amazing. And I'm a bit nervous. But I will start with the beginning. One of the beginnings. There are many beginnings for me here. But the beginning of the basic text, sixth edition, and I was fortunate enough to be a delegate when the motion came forth at the World Service Conference on whether we should have a sixth edition of the basic text. And not everybody, most people were very excited, but not everybody. Some people kind of thought that it would affect the fifth edition that they had a very affectionate relationship with. So I remember I was very excited about having a sixth edition and to make it a worldwide stories from the fellowship, worldwide fellowship. I thought it was very important that we were also included. And I said that, you know, that we're not burning our fifth edition. We just adding another edition of a basic text. And how I got involved in writing the story was that Travis from the World Service Office, I was a delegate, like I said, at the time, and she came into the European delegates meeting and asked us for stories, you know, if we would like to share some of our personal stories. And I thought, why not? I do have a story, like most people have their stories. And also I have facilities with writing, at least I had at the time. So I thought, well, I give it a try. And I was very surprised when I was told that my story was included in the basic text. I was surprised and I was also very honored. So that happened about 14 years ago. I think I wrote my story, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm still here, and I just celebrated 31 years of recovery last month. And and from living a drug-filled hippie life in the early 70s and doing lots of traveling, things have certainly changed in my life. I just realized the other day that I've been living 19 years in the same place, in the same flat. And that for me is really something, because I couldn't spend more than a few months at the same place, you know, without moving around, without having to change places and having to change people, having to change drugs, you know, I had kind of like an inner unrest that kind of forced me to be on the move, you know. And that's what we call geographic escapes today. And I was always looking for excitement, for something to happen, something new to happen that could keep me excited for a while until it got boring, and then I had to move on again. And the last years of my active addiction, I spent trying to get away from certain drugs because I thought my problem was related to certain drugs that was addictive, and that I, of course, was addicted to. And I sort of changed countries and I changed continents, and experienced that I kept on changing drugs, and I kept on changing the scenery of taking the drugs and the language you spoke around the drugs that I was taking. And for this woman to be 12-stepped, it was one of the greatest things that happened to me. And those two people that 12-stepped me that wrote about in the story, they're still clean today. One of them she went out and used for a while, but she came back again. And another, she lives in the States. She's English. And another, and this guy, he was also an Englishman. He is clean in Spain, and he has like 35 years of recovery. So, and I'm still have contact with them, and I'm forever grateful for them taking the time to help an addict that they didn't believe. They said to me afterwards that we did not think you were going to make it, because I was so far gone when the 12 stepped me, and I was so argumentative. I was, you know, I knew better than them, and I was arguing with them and telling them that I was going to go back to India and get some more, and then I could come back and pay for my treatment. And they told me, if you go back to India, you're not going to pay, you're not going to go to treatment. And I knew that they were right. And also I had been using for 20 years, and I could see that my baby girl, she was suffering from not getting the attention she needed, because for a using addict, there's no way you can give a child what that child needs, because the addiction comes first. Addiction comes before anything and anybody, no matter how strong your love is for another person. So, and I was also in jail when I was using, and then the police were after me. So, and like I wrote, I was totally physically, I was totally destroyed. I could hardly get up from bed to get my drugs and, you know, take care of my girl. So I got into recovery, and that was surely a miracle that recovery found me, rather. I didn't find anything, but recovery found me, and now I'm, by the grace of God, I was able to go to find this program and to continue into this program today. And also today, like, I have still traveled quite a lot in my recovery, but with a base to come home to. And my reason for traveling, my motives for traveling today is totally different, because I travel today to meet people, and lots of traveling has been related to being of service, because I spent altogether 8.5 years being a delegate for the Norwegian region, or it was an area in the first years, and then it became a region, and I was able to attend the European delegates meeting in many various countries, and I was able to attend four World Service conferences in Los Angeles, and for which I'm very grateful. And service has always been a very important part of my recovery, straight from the beginning, from when I tried to start this group in my hometown. I was kind of bitten by the bug, by the NA bug, and I always have this great drive to do this, to do service, because it's kind of like somebody said in a meeting one time, it fits my personality and my need to control and manage, which I'm always very good at. Controlling and managing, that's me. I like to do things to get things done, and also I'm very passionate about NA. I have been passionate about NA, and that has also, together with the step work, it has kept me clean and kept me engaged. And it says, it's written so nicely in the basic text, but at the end of the fourth chapter, about the steps. The steps are our solution. They are our survival kit. They are our defense against addiction, which is a deadly disease. Our steps are the principles that make our recovery possible. And for me, it's such an important phrase, because I can get clean just by going to meetings. But for me, I needed much more than just staying clean, because I needed a drastic personality change. And for that, I had to do something active. I couldn't just sit on my bottom and expecting to change just from doing nothing. And for me today, the way I work my recovery is like investing money in the bank. The more money I put in the bank, the more I can withdraw. And it's the same with working the program. The more I work my program, the more tools I get to face life on life's terms when life shows up. And it does for most of us, or for all of us probably, but for some more than stronger than others. We have to go through suffering and active addiction. And I experienced my most painful time ever in my whole life. I experienced in my recovery. And I got involved in a relationship after having been alone for a few years, many years. And I spent a few years with this man I met in Norway in the fellowship. And he left after a few years, and he left me very sudden and unexpected. And he went off and found himself a new girlfriend a few weeks later. And I was totally destroyed. It was so painful. And the grief was just so strong, but I had the tools that I had developed in this program, and I had the fellowship, and I had women, special women around me helping me through these difficult times, and I had my sponsor, and I had a higher power, and I used everything for what they were worth, and I used the meetings, and I shared at the meetings. And my first thought was, when this happened, was, I'm going to use. My second thought was, I'm going to jump out of the veranda, out of the porch veranda, and I live four floor up. And I thought that would be a bit messy. And also, I couldn't do that to my daughter. And I don't think it was very serious anyhow. It was my illness was speaking to me, you know, and my illness was telling me to escape one way or the other. But I didn't have to escape. I found other ways to cope, and slowly over time, the grief has lessened, and I again found a reason to live, and a reason to laugh, and a reason to have fun. And for me, that's very important, because humor is a very important part of my life today. I couldn't do without it. I have a certain kind of a black humor, which I turn to time and time and again. Just to have, I like to make people laugh. I like to laugh myself. And humor is a spiritual principle in recovery that I think many addicts have a possessed sense of humor. And thanks God for that, because otherwise it would be pretty gloom. And talking about spiritual principles, these times of the COVID-19 has been very hard and difficult for many of us. And there was a time also where I felt very heavy mooded, and it brought me down, because everything, we had lockouts here, everything was closed. And also, there's no traveling now. Folks, you know that for this traveler, I haven't been able to travel hardly at all for like, I don't know, 8 months. I just came back from Thailand to go in quarantine when this COVID thing happened. I had been in Thailand attending a convention in Chiang Mai, and going to the beach. And then I came back home to Norway. This was in March this year. And then I had to go in quarantine. But I have had to focus on spiritual principles, and especially there's been three principles that for me has been very, very, very important. One is patience, to have patience, to live just for today, that these things, this shall also pass. One of these days, this COVID shall pass, and we will have the freedom again to do what we can, want to do, what we like to do, and what we love to do. And another principle is acceptance, to accept what I cannot change and just surrender to the fact that this is a worldwide epidemic and we have to do the best we can with this epidemic. And the third one is gratitude, that I have still so much to be grateful for, because I have my job, I have my income, I work in health services, and you know, health services, we are needed because we work with people and that never changes. The people need us, people that are vulnerable or suffering or sick or dysfunctional, no, not dysfunctional, but on a not functional properly. So, and I focus a lot of gratitude this day. And, you know, to see, it's for me, it's very important to see everything that works in my life today. I still have my car, I still have my license. And I still have my flat. We still have electricity, and thanks God for that, because Norway, no, it's very dark. And it's dark and it's gloomy. It's winter time without having a real winter, but it's all wet and gloomy. And luckily now, because of the month, we have lights and Christmas lights and decoration to kind of brighten up a little bit, you know? And I take care of myself today. I go out jogging in the morning. Yesterday I was out jogging. It didn't rain for a while, so I put in my jogging shoes. And also I have continued to take care of my health, to build up my health. I don't intake poison today. I eat healthy. I rest and I sleep a lot. And I go to the training center, to the gym, and work out. And my metabolic age, I was told the other day doing some tests, is 52. And I am 67 years old today, and I'm receiving pension at the same time I'm working. And I didn't think I would live to be 30, but from the way I was destroying myself on a daily basis, today I'm not exactly superwoman, but by God's grace, I'm doing very well, and I'm feeling well, and I'm very much alive, and I'm very much grateful. And for this, I'm going to say thank you, and I'm going to enjoy, sit back and enjoy the rest of you. And hi to my friend Connor, who's going to share today also. He was also at that bird service conference when we decided to have the sixth edition of the basic text. Thank you.
Tusen takk.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Monica.
Thank you.